people who are not closely following the liturgy think that it's very rigid, it's the same all the time. Today gives us an example of how that's not true. Here we have the first reading chosen for the feast, because today's the memorial of Saints Timothy and Titus, and the gospel comes from the day, Monday of the third week. So these two readings are not usually put side by side, but this year they are. So that's part of the flexibility or the unfolding of the liturgy in surprising ways. So we have readings of Paul writing to his proteges, his spiritual sons, Timothy and Titus, and then we have in today's gospel the conflict between Jesus and the scribes from Jerusalem who accuse him of being in league with the devil. Well, I'd like to start with this. I mean, people have the impression sometimes, and you hear this online, that the dawn of the internet age or of the social media age is what brought on all sorts of conflict, all sorts of misinformation, all sorts of gossip, attacks, and just ugly human relations. Yes, it was magnified. The social media magnified these tendencies, but conflict is not new. Human conflict, misunderstanding, that's not new. Here we see it in the conflict between the scribes and Jesus, but it really goes all the way back to the very beginning. Cain and Abel, if you want to go back, or Adam and Eve, it's part of the human condition that we misunderstand, we misjudge, we come up with notions that are not completely true, and we apply them to others or prejudice, and we have limited perception. So that's not the product of the social media age. That's part of the human condition. But we do see it exaggerated now, because a person, instead of offering an insult to the person sitting next to him, can post it online, and that insult gets magnified 100,000 times. So that part is new. One of the things that we see magnified 100,000 times is this process they call demonization, where people represent their opponent as evil. Not simply that they disagree or they think that they're wrong, but that they're evil, that they themselves have to be opposed, not just their position. Demonization is one term for it. And it really is epidemic now online. People don't say, so-and-so said this and I disagree. They say, so-and-so is an idiot and a wicked man, or in worse language, actually. They use a lot of worse terms for their opponents. And that's what escalates the conflict. People are accusing each other not just of being wrong, but of being evil and of being going to destroy the world. Well, I say that we can see that magnified now, but it happens right here in the gospel. Look at what these scribes say about Jesus. Jesus is doing great things all around Galilee. He's curing people, he's attracting huge crowds, he's driving out demons, and along come these scribes from Jerusalem. So these are authority figures, are probably experts in how things are supposed to be in the religious world or in the Jewish world. And they say about Jesus, he is possessed by Beelzebul. That's the term they use for the prince of the demons, Beelzebul. By the prince of demons, he drives out demons. So they're accusing Jesus of being an agent of the devil. Now, they're not doing it to his face. They're telling other people. This is exactly how it goes online, right? They're posting this. If they had social media, they would have posted these accusations and spread it around on TikTok or something. But here, they're saying of Jesus, he's possessed by Beelzebul. By the prince of demons, he drives out demons. Obviously wrong, but that's what their position is. So they're not simply saying we disagree with him or we think he doesn't have the right to do this. They're not questioning him, as we saw in last week's readings. They're talking about him. They're talking evil about him. They're accusing him behind his back of being in league with the devil. Now, in the modern age, the typical politician or celebrity or influencer would respond by making his own accusation against them. I said, they're the ones who are in league with the devil. You think I'm evil? Well, look at you. That's the way it goes nowadays. That's exactly what Jesus does not do. Listen to what he says here. Summoning them, he began to speak to them in parables. That's the line that jumped out at me. Summoning them, he began to speak to them in parables. In other words, he didn't talk about them. He didn't attack them in some other forum. He addressed them directly. He responded to them personally. And he didn't start by saying, you're the evil ones, not me. He started by using parables. That's it. They're not parables in the way we typically use that term, but to get them to think about the situation. It's a good way of dealing with conflict, with dealing with misunderstanding. Address the person directly in a way that's not unduly confrontational. But don't simply allow errors to float around. I mean, Jesus does correct them. But he does it in such a wise way, such a prudent way. Instead of attacking them, he starts to explain, using very simple logic, about how kingdoms stand. And if one kingdom is divided against itself, well, that means it's going to fall. Household divided against itself is not able to stand. Self-evident that's true. Civil war destroys the whole country, right? A house divided cannot stand. Then he applies it to what he's doing by describing Satan as a strong man. No one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his property. Well, Satan is the strong man, and he's in charge of the world until Jesus comes along. What is Jesus supposed to do? Not simply talk about him behind his back. He has to tie him up. He has to tie him up and then take what didn't belong to him in the first place. So Jesus is stronger than Satan. Yes, he is opposed to Satan. Satan isn't opposed to himself. Jesus is opposed to him. He's making it clear what he's doing here. He is in battle. He is a king taking over a kingdom. He's not on the side of Satan. He's opposed to Satan. So you have it completely wrong. That's what he's saying to them in an indirect, in a gentle way. So I take from this, if we're in a conflict with someone, we should not start with misrepresenting them in an exaggerated way in some social forum. If we have a conflict with someone, the starting point is address them directly and address the disagreement directly insofar as is possible. Now we know that even though Jesus tried this and it was the right thing to do, it didn't work. They still accused him of being in league with Satan. He didn't change their minds, but it was still the right thing to do, and it's an example for us. Another thing that comes to mind here, and this is related to today's feast of Timothy and Titus, is that Jesus does not propose that no one is in charge, or that there should be no strong man. He's not proposing a radical socialism where everyone's equal and everyone has an equal say and everyone's free to do what he wants. No, there is a right order, there's a right authority, and it should be exercised for the good. Otherwise, someone else will exercise an evil authority for evil. That's, I think, connected to why we celebrate Timothy and Titus. Timothy and Titus are the successors of Paul and the apostles. They're the next generation. The apostles knew that they wouldn't be around forever. Paul knew he wouldn't be around forever. And he knew that the work of Jesus Christ in the church had to continue. So therefore, people have to be appointed or chosen to be the leaders of the movement. There has to be successors. There has to be authorities. it's not just a free-for-all, and everybody believes what he wants and does what he wants. So Timothy and Titus are appointed to have responsibility for what we now call a diocese. In those days, they called them churches. So they're in charge of the churches. Timothy's in Ephesus. Titus is in Crete. Paul addresses them as his spiritual sons. He calls Timothy, my dear child. He calls Titus, my true child in our common faith. He's indicating that they have inherited from him, their spiritual father, a treasure that must be guarded and shared. And so that's what Timothy and Titus are supposed to do. Perhaps the reason why this idea of right authority comes to mind is because of this error, this idea that seems to pop up a lot, because there's so much bad exercise of authority. People seem to think, well, there should be no one, and there should be no authority. Let's get rid of these evil government officials. Okay, but there still has to be someone in charge. There has to be a hierarchy of order. There has to be authority exercised. Not because someone is better than anyone else, but because for the good of all, someone has to have the authority. Paul, in writing to Timothy, acknowledges that Timothy has received a gift and that he should take responsibility for that gift. I remind you to stir into flame the gift of God that you have through the imposition of my hands. We typically apply that to the ceremony of ordination. How does a priest or a bishop become a priest or a bishop? By the imposition of hands. That's how the sacrament is conferred. So it's implying that this is a sacramental gift that Timothy has. God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but rather of power and love and self-control. So don't be weak. Be powerful, but in the power of the Spirit. Don't disregard the task that has been given to you, but do it in the way God wants you to do it. Something like, Paul says, something like I am. So do what I do. Do it the way I do it. Now, Paul was a very strong figure, very authoritative in the right sense. When he saw error, he pointed it out. He corrected people. He took charge of the area where he was supposed to be in charge, but in things that were not his business, he didn't. Good example of authority. Well, okay, so that we asked Timothy and Titus to intercede for us and to intercede for our bishops and priests and those who have rightful authority in the church. We also pray for those who have authority in the world, because we're not praying for a free-for-all or an exaggerated sense of democracy where everybody's the same and everybody's equal and has an equal say in what happens. No, we have leaders. We must pray for them so that they will exercise their leadership the way God wants them to.